Professor Samuel 27, in my opinion, what we're going to read now is David at one of the lowest spiritual ebbs in his entire life. It was not a sin of hot blood. It was a sin of continued, really quite callous behavior and lack of faith. Verse 1, David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. There's nothing better for me than that I should escape into the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will give up looking for me any more in Israel, and I will escape from him. Well, God had said that he would be king. And, you know, his faith in that promise is sometimes very strong when he, for example, twice will not kill Saul. Because he says, no, I will be king, and I do not need to kill Saul. God will do this. But that faith in the promise, if you like, of the kingdom went up and down. And this is a low point. And of course, you see the similarity in our own lives, where we likewise are given the simple promise, you will be a king priest in my kingdom. And yet you look at how life is and you think, now, how is that ever going to come true? Well, you know, he keeps on saying in Psalm 119, that very long psalm where he keeps on about how I love your word and I trust in your word when all things seem down. I mean, when he talks about the word there, all right, sometimes he uses the word Torah, and he is talking about the first five books that we have in our Bibles. But very often it's simply your word. And I think the word that he has in view is not the whole Bible that he was then extant, but rather the specific word of promise that he would be in God's plan, made the next king of Israel. That's what he keeps on and on about. Oh, I keep on thinking about your word. Well, clearly at this point he loses that faith. And how does he lose it? Because he said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. His self-talk was negative. Saul's going to win. Saul's going to get me. All God's deliverances of me, quite miraculous ones, from the hand of Saul have, I don't know, I guess he must have thought, well, that was all back then, or that was just coincidence, but Saul is going to get me. It's your self-talk in your heart that influences your behavior. You see it, I think, with Moses, when he kept saying within himself, I am a foreigner in this land. And then he has a son and calls him Gershom, a stranger in a strange land. So he loses faith in this word at this time, and he does something desperate. He goes to the Philistines. Well, he's already tried living with the Philistines in chapter 23, and they say, huh, this is David who they used to sing songs about. He's killed 10,000 of us. You know, he was told to kill 100 of us to enable him to marry the king's daughter, their king's daughter, and so he killed 200 of us. He absolutely hates us. And they were planning to kill him, and some of the psalms we have are written at that time when he's in Gath, and he has to pretend he's mad, he's crazy, and eventually manages to slip away. But now he goes back to them, so clearly he has not learnt that lesson. And life repeats so that we might learn the lessons, and yet he doesn't learn it. Well, he comes with his whole family, with his two wives, his kids, and 600 soldiers of his and their families. There has been a huge pressure on resources to just look after them all. So it's a pretty desperate idea. So he's now really desperate to prove to the Philistines that actually I hate my people Israel. And so he would go out and his men on raids, verse 8, the Geshurites, Gerzites, and Amalekites. And they, we're told, verse 8, were the inhabitants of the land from ancient times. So they should have been driven out at the time of the conquest, but they weren't. But he justifies this to Achish by saying, no, I've attacked the cities of southern Judah. I've been attacking the areas in my own land, and here's the spoil that I took from my own people, and I give it to you. That's a pretty desperate thing to do, to make sure that nobody actually blew his story. He was not at all attacking his own people. He was telling the Philistines he was, I guess giving them the spoil that he'd taken. But in fact, he was attacking various Amalekite villages. And because he's so scared that his cover's going to get blown, he practices absolute total extinction of everybody. So he was attacking small villages or scattered little, Bedouin encampments that were separated from anybody else so that the word would not get out. So what that meant was they attacked, say, some encampment of these Amalekites, killed absolutely everybody, killed the men, killed the women, and there's some little five-year-old kid running around in tears because mummy and daddy have been killed. Yep, kill him as well. There's a baby, kill that. I mean, this was absolute bloodletting, all because he was scared of possible consequence, which is why probably most murders are committed, fear of possible consequence. But he does it on a huge scale so that nobody could possibly survive to possibly breathe a word that, ah, David and his guys attacked us and killed all our people. Well, what can you say? That this was, I guess, one of the reasons why later on we're told that David couldn't build the temple because of all the blood he shed. This was not pleasing to God. It could not have been right. But you see how God works through human weakness. For one thing, these nations, as I said, are described in verse 8 as the nations who had been in the land from ancient times. In other words, they should have been driven out. So God was working through David, through David's weakness now, to do that. And also they were Amalekites. Well, Saul had been told to totally destroy the Amalekites and leave none remaining. Well, he hadn't done that. And so now God's purpose against Amalek is fulfilled through what I consider to be David's weakness. And you see this all the time, how God is not defeated. God is not beaten. God takes the weakness of David, the sin of David, and works through it. And this is a great comfort, that God is never finally defeated, even by our own failure. And he has a wonderful way of not turning away in disgust, but of actually working through human weakness and human failure. So, all we can say then is that God all the same used David, and in fact, very soon after this, David becomes king, because Saul is killed in battle, and he becomes king. Well, you may think, how could God put a guy like that in power? Well, all you can say is that God looked at certain aspects of David's life and wanted to work with them and was, I think, displeased with his lack of faith in other things. He was made king because God's word to him was fulfilled by grace, absolutely by grace, because at this time, David isn't believing it. And if you ask the question, well, what should David have done? How could all this terrible bloodshed have been avoided? Well, quite simply, by keeping on believing in God's word to him that he was going to be king. So this is, as you see, very easily translatable into our terms, that we have been promised that we will be the kings of the kingdom. Our faith in that goes up and down. We may claim at some point in our lives, as David did in Psalm 119, that you revive me according to your word, I cling on in faith to your word, etc. And, you know, David's life was preserved. I mean, these guys would have fought back as they were fighting for their lives. Yeah, David could have been killed at this time, but again, God preserved him. So all the way through, you see grace upon grace, and how God is eager to work with people, and how he is not totally fazed by human failure. Failure not just of a moment, but in this case, of a whole period in a person's life. And I think we've got to remember that as we encounter in our church life folks who likewise will be going through very long periods where they are very, very low. You don't chuck them out. You continue to work with them, just as God does with you and me, and just as he did at this time with David.